ज्ञानतिमिदान्धस्य ज्ञानं जनशलाकय चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रं अत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजं रूपुरीं मथुरीं वष्टावतीं राधाकुन्दं गिरिवरं महो राधिकमधावशम् प्राप्तुयस्या प्रतीत्यकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतस्मि वञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानं भवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः निखिलाश्रुतिमौले रत्नमालदिति निराजिता पदपङ्कजन्ता आजिमुक्तकुलायरूपश्यामनं परितस्त्वं हरिणं संश्रयामि अनर्पितचरिं चिरात् करुणयावतीर्णा खलु समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतसुन्दराद्युतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये कन्दरेषु पुरतो वसचिनन्दनः अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदातु सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलाय दक्षो विश्वाम्बरो द्विजावरो जुगधर्मपालो वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो लदिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते उपेशा गोपिका कन्त राधा कन्त नमोऽस्तुते राधे वृन्दवनादिशे करुणामृतवाहिनि कृपया निजपादब्ज दर्शन मह्यं प्रदीयतम् भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षाय क्षिप्तश्चाकमादितरङ्गमाध्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानं वृन्देन्मस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्देन्मस्ते चरणारविन्दम् श्री सचिनन्दन गौर हरि की जाय श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जाय समवेद भक्तवृंद की जाय सेंट फ्रांसिस की जाय लवर्ण की जाय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल वी मे वी कैन सेंड दैट मंगलाचरण इन द व्हाट्सएप ग्रुप सो वी हैव टू कंपोज वन फॉर सेंट फ्रांसिस वेल वी विल सी ओके प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू गुड मॉर्निंग welcome 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 I should say welcome at least 35 times you are 35 but so we are more officially today beginning our retreat here at La Verna, a very interesting sacred spot among many other sacred spots. At the end of the day, as we always say, every spot is a sacred spot. Brahma Samhita says Krishna is in every atom. So every atom sacred spot, but sometimes we have to begin in a few places to realize that every place is an altar. One Srila Prabhupada said, God is everywhere, and whatever God is, that's a temple. So God is everywhere, and whatever God is, that's a temple. Which means if A, B, and B, and B, C, B equals C as well. Yeah. But again, we have to begin somewhere. Like the beginner's devotee needs will see Krishna only in the altar, and only in his altar, as I like to say, probably not even in anyone else's altar. Gradually, okay, more generous I become. It's in your altar as well. I can accept that. I can tolerate that. Eventually, you realize you don't need to tolerate anything because Krishna is in every altar and in every heart and eventually in every atom. But we begin with a few spots, so La Verna has been our chosen spot for these days here. So welcome you all. We will be having a series of morning sharings, as you already know, and I'll try to... Today will be more of an introduction, what hopefully we try to do here today, these days, as a pilgrimage, as pilgrims. No? Hopefully you can identify yourselves as such. That's a very beautiful and sacred branding on our hearts. No? We are pilgrims. Life is a pilgrimage. No? Though we are doing this pilgrimage officially, traveling from wherever you are to La Berna for 5-day pilgrimage, hopefully the result is a bigger glimpse that the totality of existence is a pilgrimage. No? We are all on a journey. And this pilgrimage is particular because most of us, if not all of us, are followers of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, at least, as I like to say, aspirationally. No, because who dares to say, I'm following the whole thing? No? So we are trying our best. But we are in a particular place which is not strictly related to the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, we could say, in one way. So we can describe this more as of an interfaith pilgrimage, if you want to use that word, where we are exploring what I like to call sister traditions, in this case through the portal of one of its main saints, Saint Francis. So we are people from one tradition exploring. I don't like to use other traditions, as you already may know, but I like to use the word sister tradition. Because when we say other, we create this sense of otherness. And we are all different. We are all unique and diverse, but we are also very much entangled. As Martin Luther King will say, Martin Luther King Jr., we are all, we are all entangled in an inescapable network of mutuality. So we cannot escape from one another. Sorry, guys. So you better get along nicely these days because we're all interconnected ontologically. So we'll be exploring one of our sister traditions, Christianity, more particularly mystical Christianity, through arguably probably one of its most famous figures after Jesus. Probably everyone agrees almost that the second most famous figure in Christianity after Jesus is Saint Francis. Not only one of the most famous, because here we are not about who is the most famous one, but also one of the most universal ones in spirit, in how Saint Francis lived his life and his message. So my intention during, not the retreat in totality also, but during the morning sharings, will be to explore the life of Saint Francis a little bit, explore the teachings. In one sense, the two of them are inseparable. Your teaching should be your life, and your life should be your teaching. Including, of course, the particular feature that makes this place special, which is the stigmata. We will speak about that more in detail, which is a sacred marking, holy wound that Saint Francis received, more than one in his body, like Christ received on the cross. So this is the place where this happened, this area, La Berna. Today we'll go into the monastery that commemorates that in particular. But also I like to do that, since all of us come from a Gaudiya Vaishnava background, to explore Saint Francis' life and teachings by also going through the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is arguably also the most defining figure in our tradition, which in my opinion, or maybe according to my own personal bias toward Mahaprabhu, sometimes I feel we are not biased enough toward Mahaprabhu, as we should, as Gaudiya Vaishnava. So, and there are so many beautiful parallels and connections between Mahaprabhu and Saint Francis, and mystical Christianity and Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So somehow the intention will be, we remain Gaudiya Vaishnavas. I'm not planning to deconvert you to the tradition, but also to, as Father Richard Rowe will say, Franciscan mentor and friend of mine, we have a circle, and some of us will live, this is our tradition, and some of us may be living in the center of the circle, like very much insiders to the tradition. So we can move to the edge of the circle, no need to leave the circle, so we can see what's going on the other side of the circle, and to explore diversity and variety and other personalities, and we can decentralize a little bit our perspective and explore sister traditions and become familiar with them. I trust we can do it successfully in a way that not only does not disturb our faith, of course, that's not the plan, leaving you with a faith crisis at the end of the retreat. If that's required, welcome. But hopefully nourishing, no? Nourishing our faith and making it broader and deeper, like our tradition itself teaches, that I try to make it many times. No, I'll just give you one brief example. I remember a few times in the past I will speak about Gaudiya Vaishnavism and quoting maybe St. Francis or Richard Rohr or the Buddha or some Jewish mystic or whomever. And someone's like, Maharaj, why you cannot only quote Orthodox Gaudiya Vaishnav sources? And I'm like, I can, but why? Because we are Gaudiya Vaishnavs, so you have to be very orthodoxly quoting exclusively from our teachers or in our books. So I knew where this was going, so I played along and I asked him, look, so tell me which will be one very orthodox Gaudiya Vaishnav source for me to quote from. So you're satisfied and I'm loyal to my tradition. So you say, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu from Srila Rupa Goswami. It cannot get more Gaudiya than that. We are Gaudiyas and we are Rupanugas, and that's the magnum opus of Rupa Goswami. Please quote Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu only. Okay, I have no problem. I can do it. I told him, like joking, I probably know Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu way better than you. So with all respect. But before doing that, one question. Do you know the whole Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu presents this whole structure of rasa and explains God in terms of rasa? Yes, of course. That's our specialty as Gaudiya Vaishnava. Yeah. Do you know where that's coming from? That structure of rasa? The person was like, coming from? Rupa Goswami invented everything. Rupa Goswami took the structure of rasa from another work, from Bharat Muni, a work called Natya Shastra, which is a work on aesthetics, which is not a book on spirituality to begin with. It's a book on secular aesthetics. He borrowed the rasa structure and, of course, did his own genius work by putting Bhakti into the equation. But our most orthodox Gaudiya work is borrowing the structure from another work, which is not even spiritual. So that's our orthodoxy, which I'm totally fine with. I mean, orthodoxy doesn't mean that you are not being nourished from other places, even secular books. So there you have, so good for God, the orthodoxy. Right? So that's my point to make, in the sense that being orthodox to God, the Vaishnav, does not prevent us from learning and being nourished and cross-pollinating with sister traditions. That's how any tradition actually evolves and grows. There is always some cross-pollination happening. Nobody lives completely isolated in their own bubble. Okay, so that's the idea, and that has been my experience in the past. I've rediscovered in many ways Gaudiya Vaishnavism by the grace of sister traditions. So if they, by their grace, I've rediscovered my tradition, how much can I call them other traditions? How much can I build a wall between us? So again, this could be named as interfaith pilgrimage or retreat. Also, we can call it intrafaith pilgrimage. So interfaith is, okay, pollinating with sister tradition. Interfaith is also with entering conversation with my own tradition. And going through my own tradition and through some assumptions and through some things that I may need to deconstruct to rediscover my own tradition. How other traditions mirror back, so I return, quote unquote, to my tradition and I adjust accordingly. I do the GPS work of recalculating. That's important when we expose, again, to sister traditions. In the past, there was not that possibility. In the past, people from different traditions will basically kill each other, literally. And still, nowadays, there are people who, if they could, they would do that, unfortunately. Then eventually, in time, humanity got a little bit more civilized, hopefully, and they started to talk in terms in the 60s of religious tolerance. So you are from another tradition, I tolerate you. Okay, we can sit and talk, and I will not kill you. Sister, okay, thank you. It's very, very kind of you. It's very reassuring that I will leave this meeting alive. But still, it's not the deepest form of exchange, right? If I sit with someone at a conversation, you introduce yourself, like, I won't kill you in this conversation. You are thinking, I'm leaving this conversation, right? So religious intolerance, to begin with. I cannot tolerate you are from another tradition, I kill you. Religious tolerance, I won't kill you. But still, I'm completely in my own thing. Then comes more like a what sometimes called interreligious dialogue. But many times this happens still from a place of like some type of passive appreciation of everyone's doctrine without the willingness to be transformed. So I come with my own doctrine, you come with yours. We politely and in a civilized way, we exchange notes, ideas, good, very nice. See you soon. But for me, the deepest way is I'm sitting in a conversation willing to be changed by what I'm receiving from you and vice versa. So that's for me the hope in this type of gathering, the retreats or pilgrimage, that we hopefully can be transformed by the life and teachings of St. Francis, and that can shed light on the life and teachings of Mahaprabhu, and that in result can transform us in whatever way we need to be transformed. There are different ways that we need to be transformed at every stage of the journey. So hopefully that's the case. So I will personally take what we can call the perennialist approach. A perennialist is someone who acknowledges their various mystical traditions, and not so much each one of them contains a part of the truth, but each one of them contains the whole truth exposed in a particular angle or perspective or flavor. Because at the end of the day, here we are dealing with the infinite. So who can contain the infinite completely and say, our tradition has everything, everything. We are not missing anything. Like, that's how a religious fanatic begins, right? So watch out for that if that voice starts coming. You. No? In our Vedic background, that's very normal. Ekachapi pram bahuda avadanti, it says, truth is one and the sages speak of it differently. Like implying the absolute is one, the infinite is, well, there's one infinite, it's only one, but it's infinite. And therefore you will find many sages, many saints, many mystics speaking about it in different ways. And it's not that who is right and who is wrong. They're all exploring an infinite diamonds with multi layered dimensions and facets and so on. So that's the idea, trying to come to this pilgrimage open, in an open way, to be opened and to be opened, not only coming open, but willing, being willing to be opened a little bit more, stretching a little more, to be humbled, to be amazed. That's how St. Francis lived his life at every step. That's how Sri Chaitanya Dev lived his life at every step. That's how so many other great masters have walked this earth and left their legacy to up for us. So as I said before, we can call it a retreat. I like to use more the word pilgrimage, which for me sounds a little bit more committed. Retreat is something I go to the retreat, I pay for the weekend, it was cool, I'm back home. Pilgrimage is something else that also demands another price, which is not in terms of euros or anything, but it's inviting us to pay in coins of longing and commitment and openness and willingness to be transformed. But if we want to use the word retreat, I have no problem. Retreat also implies retiring, taking a distance from usual life dynamics for a few days, like we are doing now, inhabiting a common space, taking distance from certain life, taking distance from something. So from that distance, we can see things with a new perspective. Like I like to say, that's the definition of detachment, vairagya. My hand is too close to my eye, I cannot see it. I need to take some distance. Oh, there is a hand there. So in the same way, we are living our life with many things very close to us, and sometimes because they are very close, we lost sight of what they actually are, what actually happened. We may need to take some distance. So we return back home with a refreshed view and perspective, and can deal with things deeply as well. And yeah, of course, hopefully together we can create a sacred space, sacred community, sacred sharing, sacred recognizing of things, recognizing, to see again, respect, to look anew, refresh. And hopefully we can also develop like a new way of looking at ourselves, because all of us come here, including me and everyone, with a certain way of seeing not only the world, God, Mahaprabhu, St. Francis, but also ourselves. And many times the ways we see ourselves or others are all still have some filters, assumptions, limitations, wounds, trauma, who knows, the list can be long. And beautiful things as well, hopefully. So hopefully in this space we can also heal whatever needs to be healed, transform whatever needs to be transformed, and move forward into a deeper version of ourselves. Again, meeting someone like St. Francis of Mahaprabhu for us is also having a mirror to our greatest potential. That's always the price of meeting a great master, that they will reflect back all that you can be, and then you're in trouble. Because once you see that, you can no longer unsee that. Once someone gives you a glimpse of this all that you can be, what to do with that now? I'm in trouble. Now I have homework for eternity. That's holy trouble. I say good trouble, as they say sometimes in English. And hopefully, again, this is something that hopefully this is an experience, collective experience that hopefully we can all build together. Please don't think that this is all depending on Swami Padmanabha. Don't be so cruel with me. Don't put all this, all the success of the experience, whatever success is, depends on one person. But we are all building here community together. So hopefully we can get this glimpse of what community really means, communion, belonging to something bigger. I was reflecting these days, especially having arrived in Rome, which it's a country where there is lots of, and coming from Argentina recently and coming through Colombia and having been in Netherlands. And I'm mentioning all this because now the World Cup is going on in terms of soccer. I don't want to bring your attention fully there. Just enough to make my point. And of course, I'm from Argentina, so everyone is mad about soccer over there, and they won the World Cup, so everyone is thinking they will win again and all of the things. But my point is, like, I was at one point thinking, well, why people get so mad about this tournament and they really get so passionate, as I did myself in my teenage years. And of course, we could say many things, many ways to respond to that, but the main point I want to make here is that to leave a World Cup allows people to feel that they belong to something bigger than themselves. Yeah? They are no longer by themselves. Now I'm belonging to this whole country. So I belong to something bigger. And that in itself creates a sense of liberation and relief and identity and belonging again and purpose and meaning. Of course, still there is some other enemy on the other side, the other team that we need to destroy. So still it's limited, it's not the final belonging, but it's a glimpse of that that gives a higher taste, quote unquote, compared to the sense of loneliness and isolation and not belonging that most people feel during their most of the year, so to say. So I was just reflecting on that. Again, that's still a very partial expression of that, but just to make the point of how much we all need to feel we belong to something bigger, to ourselves. So hopefully these days together we can create that in community, that we are not alone, we are not separated, we are not isolated, and in that we can, in Sangha, basically, in community, we can find these three elements that for me are very important, which is belonging, identity, and purpose. You cannot live without them. And we already have them, but we may get distracted from them. We already belong, as Father Richard Rohr would say, everything belongs. But we need to become aware of our belongingness. So that gives you a sense of identity and a purpose in life. So hopefully we can go deeper in that as well. And hopefully, again, as I say, each one of us is coming to the table, literally, I have a table here. So we are coming to the table, to the retreat, with our own life journeys and trajectories and gifts and insights and unresolved stuff and messiness and trauma and revelations. It's all a very beautiful mixed bag, which is who we are, and it's beautiful in itself. So I'm just extending the invitation, hopefully in the name of all, hopefully we can build together, again, a safe space enough so everyone feels safe enough to bring all that we are so far in our conversations, in our sharings, in our getting to know each other, in our daily adventures, and we don't feel the need to pull out some of the masks we may have brought in the luggage, not to like look nice and impress others and be very transcendental and beyond everything. So we can keep them in the luggage during the whole pilgrimage, and we can just be raw, naked, transparent, authentic, vulnerable. Hopefully we can feel the safety to do that. If that's not the case, it's okay. But hopefully we can all build together this space and this safety for that to happen. So we can, again, get as closer as we can to how people like Saint Francis and Mahaprabhu lived their own lives, which was from that place of complete transparency, authenticity. We want to get more and more aligned with the lifestyle of our masters, so to say. It's, again, aspirationally. We'll take it one day at a time, one moment at a time, trying to be present, hopefully, to each other, to what's going on in the here and now, not getting too much into yesterday and tomorrow. One day at a time, allowing what needs to die to die, what needs to be born to born again. One day at a time, one funeral at a time, as they will say sometimes. So that's part of the invitation. Please, let's try all to be as present as we can here. That's why I suggested to have a sober use of technological devices, so to say. Not to say you can put all your phones here and I will take them to my room and I'll give you back in 5 days, but those who will like, I leave the bag there just in case. But if not, just try to bring some awareness of not getting kidnapped by that world and being as much as we can present. This is the deepest technology, human connection. That's a real technology, the most refined way of connectivity, so to say. Hopefully we can commit to honesty as much as we can in the retreat. Hopefully we can also be willing. We will be having exercises to share with one another, to know one another, to go deeply into what we are sharing. So hopefully we can also learn to listen with compassion and with empathy, with sincerity, receive the other as well as the willingness to be received. And see all this as a trailer to our Bhakti project in eternity, because our Bhakti project in eternity includes community, includes relationships, just in case, don't forget that. You won't be assigned your own private room in Golok Vrindavan, and you don't have to deal with anyone, including Radha and Krishna. And it's like, you will put a sign outside, don't bother me today, no Ashakaliya Leela and all that stuff. That's not happening. So every relationship here is a practice in divine relationship in eternity. No? It's a trailer for eternal community. How we get along these days is a trailer for how we want to get along in eternity, basically. Because I look forward to do this for eternity. So see you in eternity. Again, this is a retreat, but going back to my most favorite word is also a pilgrimage. In our tradition, we have a few words for pilgrimage. I want to stay there for a few minutes. One of them is, of course, parikrama, which interestingly, parikrama means, of course, I'll go there in a minute, but it's more related to circumambulation. You say that in English? That's an interesting word. But in general means pilgrimage, and as we say before, the idea is, okay, I'm visiting a place, holy people, holy communion, holy community, and by that gradually I can get the realization that the whole is everywhere. I can extend the notion of the sacred to wherever I'm going. But we have to begin somewhere. Like in our tradition, we'll say, okay, we want to see Krishna everywhere. That's the vision of the highest devotee. Bhagavad Gita says, Jumam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati pasyati tasyaham na pranasti satchame na pranasti. He who sees me in everywhere, he or she who sees me everywhere, and sees everything in me, I'm never lost to him, her, nor he, she is never lost to me. That's the ideal goal to attain. But we have to begin somewhere. And today, these days, begin in Laverna. And our tradition makes that point very interestingly, right? Because our tradition will say, okay, we have to connect with God. Okay, God is in his name. Okay, begin there. But also, God is in the deity. Okay. But also, God is in the Bhagavata, right? And God is in the Dham, and God's coming through Guru. So eventually you realize, actually, they are talking about God being in so many places, right? With the idea of making the point, like, ultimately, he's everywhere. But we give you a few entry doorways, entry portals, but then you end up discovering the divine everywhere. So, so that's part of that. Of what a pilgrimage is about. And in that, God is everywhere. Something special that I like to highlight that is very important for me. And that will be the topic of my next book, which is God's Unconditional Love, which is a big theme in the life of Saint Francis, especially, and why not of Mahaprabhu? Which is this idea of, okay, if God is everywhere, God is not different from love, God is not different from unconditional love, unconditional grace. So therefore, God's unconditional grace is everywhere. We are loved and accepted unconditionally everywhere. That's also the point. If God's love is everywhere, I'm being loved and accepted everywhere. Not only when I enter the temple, when I'm in front of this person, but when I'm thrown on the floor in my worst moments, I'm accepted everywhere. At every time, at every moment, and every place. So I think that's an important theme for us to... to bear in mind and hopefully to embody for one another. Unconditional regard, loving unconditional regard, as sometimes it's spoken of. So that's for me the idea of being an open pilgrim, to enter a pilgrimage with the openness of accepting and realizing how accepted we already are, how loved we already are, how seen we already are. Many of us have been in pilgrimage. Some of us have been in pilgrimage even together in a few places or retreats. But still, the invitation remains to be an open pilgrim. Because we can also be what I once read a book called The Reluctant Pilgrim. You know, you understand the word reluctant? So like more like someone resistant. Resistant pilgrim. And so you can be officially a pilgrim. I'm in the pilgrimage, I'm in the retreat, I have my name on the list, but there may be some degree of reluctance. And in all, there may be that. There are degrees of being an open pilgrim and a reluctant pilgrim. In that connection, if you allow me, I'd like to share you a brief excerpt of this forthcoming book that I'm publishing. Exclusive trailer for those coming to the retreat. Actually, I'm recording. I will be sharing that on YouTube. So, at least for the time being. Going back to the idea of life as pilgrimage. So it says, life in its deepest essence is a pilgrimage, not merely a journey to a sacred place, but the sacred act of learning how to walk. Like Arjuna asked Krishna in the Gita, how a mystic walks through life. And he's not talking about some particular style of moving your feet, of course, but moving through that. Not walking to earn love, but walking as one already loved. That's the walking of a pilgrim. Not someone, okay, have to go to Laverna to see if Krishna likes me a little bit more and finally he puts some attention to me. I'm walking to Laverna to convince Saint Francis that I deserve grace. That's not pilgrimage. So we are trying just to deconstruct that before we begin the pilgrimage. Sacred pilgrim is not someone walking to earn love, but walking as one already loved. Every step becomes holy when taken in the awareness that we are held, accompanied, and invited. Not because we are perfect, but because we belong. Again, we already belong. To walk through the world in the shoes of a pilgrim, so you can walk barefoot if you want, shoes is the imaginary. To walk through the world in the shoes of a pilgrim is to move through ordinary life with extraordinary awareness. Which is that extraordinary awareness that grace is always near and every moment is an altar. We have to become poetic, sorry. There's no other way around it. Grace is always near, not to say immediately close and in me and immediate closer, as the Sufis will say, closer to your jugular vein. Grace is always near, and every moment is an altar. Not only every place, every moment. It's sacralized time. If we let it be. No. Let it be. And yet, it has been said that nothing impedes spiritual growth more than the reluctant pilgrim. So watch out for that one that will come to visit you on a daily basis, probably. The one who cannot yet believe that love is unconditional. And I say, nah, that sounds too good to be true. No, Swami's exaggerating here. They want to sell us some product. No, this is not true. It cannot be that true. The one who walks, the reluctant pilgrim, the one who walks, but not in gratitude, but in performance. Still trying to impress, trying to earn, trying to deserve, still transactional. The one who still secretly hopes that effort will be enough to finally deserve what was never meant to be earned. This is still one of the hardest things for us to accept. One of the most beautiful things, but in connection to what of the most beautiful things. This is still one of the hardest things for us to accept, that the sweet absolute loves us freely, fully, and without condition. That's the most beautiful thing. That's the most difficult thing to accept. It's too good to be true. It sounds too good to be true. And to love ourselves on that foundation is as beautiful and hopeful as it is difficult and demanding. And I finish with one quote from Hafiz. So let's bring Hafiz into the picture. Why not? We already have Mahaprabhu and St. Francis. Let's bring our Sufi madman to the tower. This will be a trailer of our poetry night as well. Trailer. So if you are scared to death and you are planning to leave the retreat after 5 minutes, I keep you here because we'll have a poetry night. So don't go anywhere. So he says, Hafiz says, this is in the translation of Daniel Ladinsky, also another friend. Hafiz says, we should make all spiritual talk simple today. God is trying to sell you something, but you don't want to buy. That is what your suffering is. Your fantastic haggling, your manic screaming over the price. That's it. Let's make it simple. God is trying to give you, as Srila Sanyasa will say, Krishna is giving you everything on a golden plate, and the only thing he's asking is you just extend the hand and receive the gift. And that proves to be so difficult for us sometimes, because we don't even yet believe that the gift is true. we may be thinking, what's behind that? That sounds too nice to be true. Maybe I extend my hand, they will cut my hand, they will demand something more, whatever. So, but the true thing is that to be a real pilgrim is to walk again through life as someone who is already accepted, already beloved, and hopefully, if some of us, probably all of us, to some degree, we do not fully believe that yet, we can convince each other by our own company these days a little bit more that we are seen, accepted, held, beloved in how we treat and relate to each other. And if we do so, then we are doing actual parikram. Parikram at the end of the day is a celebratory act. Now we will move out of like dancing. Hopefully our moving is in gratitude, is in wonder. And that's why, interestingly, another word for parikram in Sanskrit is yatra. Sometimes they use the word yatra for pilgrimage. But yatra also can mean celebration, like festival. Ratha yatra, Julan yatra, this yatra, that yatra. So yatra means pilgrimage, and yatra means celebration, festival. In other words, your pilgrimage should be done in a spirit of celebration, a spirit of gratitude for all the gifts that already are there. So that's parikram. No? And parikram, as I said before, means circumambulation. So walking around something. So that's what we'll try to do these days. Not literally, we may be circumambulating some places. Circumambulating. Okay, sounds like an ambulance coming in between. Circumambulating. That is good. That's good. So I have to make a pause there. Circumambulating.
Okay. Yeah, ambulate is like to move around.
Yeah. So the idea will be like when you walk around something, you kind of become aware of that from all its different place, perspectives and sides. So it's like an exhaustive exploration. Jignyasa, Tato Brahma Jignyasa. We are to inquire the infinite from infinite perspectives, infinite possibilities. There's no end to the inquiry. That's the interesting thing. Vedanta Sutras are saying, Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now is the time to inquire about Brahman, which means that which is vast and keeps expanding. Which indirectly is saying the inquiry will never be over. Right? I invite you to inquire about the infinite. Okay. Let's do it. So that's what we'll be trying to do these days, to do this parikram, which also is connected to exhaustive inquiry, but not so much headspace, to be willing to discover whatever needs to be discovered, from especially the unexpected places where we think, oh, there's nothing to be discovered in this particular direction. You better go there deeply. This is how Krishna in the Gita recommends that a disciple should inquire. Tadbidhi pranipatena. Next word, please. Thank you. So pariprasnena. Pariprasna means to inquire all around. That's the duty of a disciple. That's the duty of a student. So we are all here students, like Srila Siddhartha Maharaj will say. We're students forever. So we are invited to walk through life as a sacred pilgrimage all around, exploring all around. Not thinking only in this direction I can learn something, only in this place. All around there is grace, all around there is the object of my affection, all around there is an invitation for inquiry. Even with a question, we'll be doing some exercise, we'll be giving you some questions to sit with at some individual retreats, and you will be invited to sit with the question and do parikram to the question. Inquire all around. What does this mean to me now? In this way, in that way, in that way. Returning repeatedly. So that will be mostly the mood of these days' exploration, as I like to say. We have the Saturday satsang, we don't call them Q&A. Questions and answers, we call them Q&E, which is a great play of words which I cannot do in Spanish, so I have my trouble when I do. We have those at some. But Q&E for us means quest, not questions, quest and exploration. So we'll privilege exploration rather than explanation. Exploration. Again, we are exploring the infinite. We will try to privilege discussion over definition. Not so much like this is it, this is like that, I define it, end of the conversation, game over, next topic. No. Discussion. Again, exploration. Ongoing conversation. I like more the word conversation rather than conversion. And in conversation, the conversion happens, but it's ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. So, yeah, in fact, many times we will be invited, and hopefully we feel invited here. Many times, some of us may be coming here looking for some answers, and that's fine. But sometimes you may be finding questions instead of answers. And you may be invited to stay with the questions long enough till they start to bloom in the form of an answer, like Renya, Maria, Rilke will say. Love the questions. Love the questions, and the answers you need will come eventually. So before we conclude, I will invite you to do one small exercise to close today's morning gathering. And I will be inviting you to do that every day, a few times per day. So don't hate me, please. Since we are sharing some exclusive trailers, I share one from my fourth book. It's funny because I actually finished a fifth book, which I have not even published the fourth one. So I'll show you a little excerpt of the fifth book in connection to the word parikram, which is what we are supposed to be doing here these days. It says, that's another way of speaking about what we are about to be experiencing these days, parikram. It says, seen through a wider lens, parikram echoes one of the oldest patterns of human transformation, an initiation, a rite of passage, or what some mythic traditions described as the hero's journey or the heroine's journey, a threefold movement of separation, transition, and incorporation. Separation. First, separation. The traveler leaves familiar territory, as you have all done leaving your hometown or wherever you are living. Separation, in that sense, separation. Leaving familiar territory. Then transition. Then comes the uncertain middle. The landscape of testing, learning, and encounter. And finally, the third one, incorporation. Finally, the traveler returns, as we all hopefully will do, not as the person who departed, but as someone altered by the road, by the journey itself. The landscape remains the same when you are back home, yet the vision has changed. So that's what we hope will happen in one way or another, in ways we may not imagine and expect. So that's important also to release expectations in how particularly these things will happen, but that's the idea, that we all returned transformed in whatever ways we need to be transformed at this chapter of our journey, of our sacred pilgrimage, our life. So this is basically a brief introduction today to what we are supposed to be doing together these days. And I'd like to conclude with a small exercise. So I will share what the exercise is about, of course. Those who know, have been in some of my retreats already aware of these exercises. You are not that traumatized, right? You keep coming. Or you are all masochistic. I don't know what's going on. So the exercises are, of course, ways of trying to embody what we have just shared, right, to make it more alive, more relational, more experiential. And it these particular ones will be done in groups of three. So we also get to know each other a little bit more and get to discover the richness and the gift that each one of you are for one another. So we can listen and receive. So we'll be doing that in groups of three. Maybe if we are not exactly three, one group may have four. And I will be selecting the groups. So if you don't like anything, I'll take care of that. We can speak. And I'll try to shift the groups. And that will be challenging for me to every single day shift the groups, remembering who was with whom. So while making new group. If I'm putting you with the same person over and over again, just let me know. Not because there is a problem with that person, but you may like to share with everyone. Right? So I will have other retreats exercise apart from the morning gathering. So there will be also chances to share. So this will be in groups of three. I will share the prompt first, and then I will be reminding, because there are a few things to be done, and I will be marking the time. That's why we have a singing bowl here, if you were wondering. So I will be marking the time for that. Let's see. Yes. So I will be giving three, in groups of three, I will be giving you three questions. So for each question, the whole group will have 6 minutes. So in total, we'll spend like 15 minutes or something doing the exercise. So 6 minutes, the whole group. So 2 minutes per person in groups of three. So I will be giving three questions. So in first question, I will be sharing it in a moment, of course. So one person will reply to that question for 2 minutes. And the other two will be listening empathically, openly, not trying to give advice, not interrupting, not preaching, not telling them what they should do with their life. Just bearing witness in full, hopefully embodying unconditional acceptance and love in regard. And of course, while you are answering or saying your part, again, not trying to perform, not trying to be perfect, to give the impressive answer that you think the other wants to hear. Try to speak honestly for where you are now. Yeah, that's clear so far? So, and I will be marking every 2 minutes, so everyone knows when, okay, the turn for the other is, then after the 6 minutes I'll marking, and I will be repeating the next question, and then the other question. I will be mentioning the three now, but then I will be repeating. So it's sustainable for each one of you. I won't be joining the groups, as you can imagine, because I will need to be doing all that thing. So, first question, and again, I'm mentioning, you can write it down or I will be repeating it, is what does pilgrimage mean for you at this moment of your life? What this word evokes? What does pilgrimage mean for you at this moment of your life? Maybe not traveling to a sacred place, walking through life with more awareness. Where do you feel you are on your journey right now? Whatever comes. So that's the first question. What does pilgrimage mean for you at this moment of your life? I will say the other two questions and then select the groups and then we do the exercise. The second one is, what part of you is open to being transformed during these days? We have a new guest to the retreat. Bumblebee. Ramargit. We can do. What part of you is open to being transformed during these days? Because again, as we say, retreat is not about just receiving information, but being in formation and being formed and transformed. Information in transformation. So allowing ourselves to see differently. So is there something in you that feels ready to be softened, expanded, be seen in a new way? And the third question is, what does it mean for you to belong to something greater than yourself? We briefly touch upon that. And hopefully we can convey that in the sense of community. What does it mean for you to belong to something greater than yourself? It can be in connection to experiencing community, shared spiritual life, what helps you feel part of something larger, or what something makes that difficult, whatever comes. Okay? So I'll pause the recording. I'm recording this and I'm recording the prompts in case whomever is watching this would like to find two friends in the neighborhood and do the exercise yourself. So I'm putting pause to this. Simhan Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, St. Francis Ki Jai, Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai.